Hi, I'm Katie Lauer. I want to tell you a story about Curly Ray Klein, who played the fiddle with Ralph Stanley's Clinch Mountain Boys back in the 70s and 80s. We got to the Bluegrass Festival in Wise, Virginia, early on a Friday morning, and by afternoon we had our record table set up. The sun overhead was hot and bright, and there was no shade at all. So we set up a canopy over our little merch mart. When Curly Ray Klein, the fiddler for Ralph Stanley's band, saw our tarp, he asked whether he could put his record table underneath it too. I considered that to be a stroke of good luck. Curly was known as the best record salesman ever, and I was eager to watch him in action. Festival money was okay, but scarce, so musicians started marketing their record albums. Everything was still vinyl in those days. The more industrious musicians started selling 8-track tapes, T-shirts, and keychains, with their picture on one side and their life story on the other. Curly had all this merchandise. His keychains are worth big money nowadays, plus some of the band's gospel records, with pictures of Ralph Stanley and the boys with their hats off, their faces reverently turned up to the heavens. It didn't take him long to spread out his wares, just so, on his folding table, and you could almost hear him sighing, rubbing his hands together in anticipation of cold, hard cash. Although he'd brought along a lawn chair, I never saw him sit in it once during the entire weekend. Curly was a round man with a thick, kinky bush of hair that looked like a Brillo pad. He was as merry as a cricket, as my grandfather used to say, and a grin split his moon-shaped face in half. His greedy little eyes narrowed when he looked at our sparse operation. "Ain't you got you any T-shirts?" he asked me, bobbing his head. He was animated offstage just as he was on stage. His grin never changed. His eyes were constantly moving over the people milling around. Two men in their late 40s with the kind of mountain faces you could spot a mile off came up to my table. They were wearing railroad bill caps and overalls so stiff the legs made a whipping sound when they walked. They told me they were farmers from Mitchell County, North Carolina, and I could tell they were bashful. They complimented me on my singing. "You sound a right smart like Patsy Cline," one of them said, smiling shyly. Before I could respond, Curly grabbed one of them by the arm. "Now, boys, them's britches. New, ain't they?" The farmers warmed to Curly quickly, proud that he had noticed their new pants. "You got to make a good living to afford britches like that nowadays," he went on. The three of them discussed inflation and overalls cordially for a few minutes, and when I looked again, they were both leaving with two of Curly's albums. One minute I was basking in their compliments, and the next minute Curly had their money. I sat for a while watching people walk back and forth between the grandstand and the camping area. We were close to Pendleton Gap, Virginia, surrounded by mountains and a rocky landscape. The parking fields in the old fairgrounds were already full of pickup trucks and recreational vehicles, and more were arriving, churning up clouds of red dust as they parked, and then rolled out coolers and buckets of Kentucky Fried Chicken. The country folk were dressed up for the festival in double-knit leisure suits or short-sleeved white shirts and ties. The city people wore Nike jogging shoes, bleached jeans, and aviator sunglasses. Everyone wore wristbands as proof of admission. I was thinking about this unusual mix of music fans when Curly's friend Mason Little arrived. Mason was about 5'10" and thin as a rail. He managed Ralph Stanley's Bluegrass Festival at McClure, Virginia, and he carried himself with an air of gravity, as if he were aware of the authority of his position. "I heard you've been carrying around a couple of dogs," he said to Curly. One of the members of the Stanley Band drifted by to sit a spell and visit. The visitor was Charlie Sizemore, an attractive young man, and as the afternoon wore on, Curly and Mason noticed that two young girls had been dropping by the record table rather often. They talked to Curly, but they were watching for Charlie and Junior Blankenship, another of Stanley's young players, and they were not very adept at hiding their interest. When Mason came back from eating supper later that evening, he saw the girls hanging around again. He shook his head as they walked away. Nowadays, a girl don't have no more idea than a rabbit how to get a boy to pay attention to him, he said, almost to himself. Curly agreed, nodding his head. He stabbed the record table with his index finger. What we ought to do, Mason, is tell them girls where they're going wrong. Mason considered this for some time before speaking again. I raised 7 daughters and had nary a bit of trouble with any of them, thank the Lord. By now it was full night, dark after a period of deep purple sky. It was time to close up, and Curly said, well, when we get here tomorrow, I think you better be the one to talk to them. Curly got busy counting out fat wads of dollar bills and hands full of change. He was almost licking his lips in delight. How'd you do? He asked me, narrowing his eyes and grinning like a fox. Well, I know when I'm outclassed, I said. Better luck tomorrow, he said, his dark bushy eyebrows arching smugly. By the time I got back to the record stand the next morning, Curly was already there, down on one knee, playing the fiddle for a small red-haired toddler who was sucking his thumb and smiling sweetly. Naturally, his parents bought several of Curly's albums, and he slipped the money in his wallet as smoothly as if it were oiled. It ain't so much what you do on stage as what you do off, he said. I promise to do better. That afternoon, Ricky Skaggs and his wife Brenda dropped by to visit with Curly. They showed him pictures of their new baby, Amanda Jewel, and everybody oohed and aahed over her. Ricky had just put out his first solo album, Sweet Temptation, and he was in good spirits. His voice was high-pitched and tenor, and he was wickedly funny in those days. When he saw me with my record table set up next to Curly's, he just shook his head. This thing right here, he said, grabbing Curly's Chicken Reel album, cost me a lot of record sales when I was playing with Ralph Stanley. People would come by to see the album Keith Whitley and I had made, and Curly would run right over with that album saying, why don't you folks take a look at this record? It's got both them boys on it. And there went my record sale. I nodded my head in sympathy. Well, one day I struck back, Ricky said. See these chickens on the cover? Well, I sat down at the record table while Curly was taking a break, and I cut the eyes out of the chickens with my pocket knife on about 17 albums. Curly looked pained, but just then 3 men approached the table, looking casually at his display. Curly sized them up, then sprung. Got a record player, do you? He asked one of them shrewdly. No, the man said. How about a tape player? The man shook his head again. No. So Curly sold them keychains. Mason tapped Curly's shoulder while he was counting the money. Here comes them girls again, Mason said slowly. I guess now's my chance. He straightened, hitched up his pants, and approached them. Girls, you're doing this all wrong. They looked at him and blushed. Now, if you want boys to notice you, just be wherever they are, but don't look to the right nor to the left. Just act like they ain't there and go on about your business. That wasn't what they wanted to hear. Nevertheless, they promised Mason they'd try it. Aw, Mason groaned as if the weight of it were on his shoulders. I left with my band to do the last show. It felt good. Lights just right, mics with just the right edge, and the band was rested and enthusiastic. When I returned to the table, it was crowded, and I was busy for a while. Still, I watched Curly out of the sight of my vision. He shook hands, kissed babies, talked about dogs. I was amazed at the number of people he knew. Talking to that many people would have drained me dry. But Curly showed no signs of flagging. His head just kept bobbing. He could talk to more than one person at a time while congenially collecting and making change from a great wad of cash he held tightly in his fist. His curly hair and ruddy cheeks made him look like a combination of Santa Claus and Nikita Khrushchev. "Now tell the truth," he said to me when things slowed down. "Don't you do just a little better on your record sales a setting by me?" "I only lost about a third," I said dryly. Curly looked sympathetic. "Just remember, to sell something, you got to have something to sell, and you got to set up someplace where there's traffic." He looked over his shoulder to see if anyone was listening, then moved his head a little closer to mine. "You know what they say about me?" he asked. "They say just walk around beside Curly Ray Klein for a while, and money'll just fall into your pocket." "That's the truth," Mason Little piped in. He had just sauntered up out of the shadows, wearing an expression even more serious than usual. His bill cap was cocked to one side, and he scratched behind his ear. "I know it for a fact." I got in the van and waved at them, knowing I'd see them again in a couple of weeks, surprised that they had revealed so much to me. I had forgotten about country folks' canny ways with money. My own grandfather had been a respected man in Tennessee because he was a shrewd horse trader. He kept a cool head, people said, as if he'd occupied a seat on the New York Stock Exchange. Then the teenage girls came back around for one final consultation with Mason and Curly. "It worked," I heard one of them say, giggling. We walked right on by them, and pretty soon they came a-hollering at us. I settled back in my perch in the van and watched the night stars, so clear out there away from city lights, and I was sure I saw it when Curly winked at Mason, looking a lot like the fox he hunted with his dogs. The moon made hollows in his face, and I could see his eyes glitter. For Around Cincinnati, this is Katie Lauer, and that's my story about Curly Ray Klein.